when one would hope that that occurs. There's actually a wonderful and famous story of two of the Buddha's most senior students. One is Sariputra and the other one is Anuruddha. And one of them, I can't remember which one was on which side of this question, but one of them was just, you know, he had all this meditative ability, you know, and he could do all this stuff and he could keep things in his attention and on, and he kept noticing, like, you know, hindrances, you know, when the hindrances came, bam, he could recognize them. And yet he went to his colleague and he said, you know, I still haven't discovered the deathless. And it's funny because what his colleague said to him was, you're caught in pride about, you know, how quickly you can be with these negative states of mind and heart. And you're not noticing the deathless. And it's interesting because at first, what we're asked to do is notice the rising and falling of these states that constantly pull us into suffering because they've been sneaking in and catching us and pulling us up into, like, rumination and all that kind of stuff. And that's our job. And once that's established, you're right, our job is then to trust that establishment and start noticing the moments of peace, the moments when those are not present, the moments when there is quiet and calm and this serenity in the mind and in the body. And to actually awaken to that experience rather than having the kind of urge. Well, sometimes I've heard it described, and I've certainly described it that way too, that kind of bug zapper relationship with the hindrances, you know, where you're going, oop, zap, oop, zap. And that's still leaning into the experience too much. It's still like waiting for something negative instead of just being with the peace that's already there and opening to it. So does that answer that for you? That there's a wonderful description of that conversation in a book called Small Boat, Great Mountain, which you can download off the internet free. It's just wonderful. I think it's called The View from the Forest. The chapter, I think it's called A View from the Forest. That kind of consciousness has a name. It's called cessation consciousness. Why do you think it's called that? Because cessation means the ceasing of hatred, the ceasing of hating what is, the ceasing of greed to want what you want, the ceasing of delusion, and opening to the isness that's already here. You know, the man pulling radish points the way with the radish, that quality of heart and mind. So anything else? You know, it's interesting because that story seems to me to be an embodiment of both equanimity and patience and courage. because you choose sometimes to do something because you know unequivocally it's the right thing to do. Impossible or not, that's the right thing to do. And, you know, once in my life, I was given a tremendous gift. I have this odd ability. I don't know why, and my daughter has it too. We both can have really strong senses of smell. And so I was in Idaho, and my husband and I were driving down this road, and all of a sudden, I said, "Please stop the car." And my husband said, "Why?" And I said, "Just do it, please. I'm desperate for you to do it." He stopped the car. I jumped out. I ran through the forest and just kept getting closer and closer. I could smell fire. And I came upon this fire that had just, probably somebody had camped in a non-camping zone, and they probably had not known how to adequately put their fire out. But this fire at that point was in a circle about the size of this room. And I had that sense. I went right there. But you know what? I went there with this quality of, okay, this is what needs to be done. And there was not desperation there. You know, I don't know how to defend the parrot, and I won't. You know, that's not my job, thank goodness. Those tales are there for teaching, for us to understand in our own way. And you're hearing something different, and you might want to respect that. You know, but for me, I know that feeling of looking and saying, there are two of us, and look at the size of this fire, and we don't even have a shovel. And yet, I know what has to be done. So, you know, it's fun because I ran back. I told my husband, "Please go back to the campground and bring everybody that has a shovel who will come." So they did. I found a stick. I'm like busily digging, you know, working. Well, he's gone. And by the time the Forest Service got there, we had contained the fire. It took us hours and hours, but we had done it. So they paid us. We got $9 an hour. That's great. I think I got $18 or so dollars, and that was great. But it's not, you know, it's not looking at the experience and saying nobody can have equanimity within that experience because they can. They can. It's knowing the opposite, that equanimity is possible in the midst of life's storms. And that the way to it is most certainly the way of quiet. Well, Tonda today used a word, she called it dogged. Quiet, dogged action. You know? Okay, here's this intention. And I'll go about trying to bring it to fruition with all my heart. You know? At the end of the day, when you lie down in your bed, even if you hadn't accomplished it, that sense would still be present for you. That sense of, oh, I gave it all I could. I did the best I knew how. And that's enough. So thank you, dear heart.
Think about whether you're tired and you need to rest, or think about exploring.
To explore it meditatively is very different from trying to use an historical tracing. Very different. So you take it into the body. What's the experience of drowsiness like? So are the eyelids heavy? Is there a sense of, like, you know, sort of that melting sense in the body? What's the breath doing? And you notice that there's kind of a wonderful little trick in this method, because when you do become curious about something, what happens? You wake up. Yeah. So it has that quality of cultivating wakefulness and, you know, like dropping away from sleepiness. You're welcome. You know, I think that in the spiritual world, one of my teachers, Ram Dass, he said over and over something that has proven to be so true for me, and I hope that all of you will hear it, because his words were very wise. Keep the healthy kind of doubt as the stick that stirs this fire of your practice. Don't suspend your doubt, but rather cultivate a kind of healthy questioning. And in fact, there's this wonderful sutta that the Buddha gave. And on, he goes to this village, and people are used to coming to, all these teachers are going to this village, and they say all these contradictory teachings. So one will come and they say, well, Maureen and I were talking about, follow the breath at the nose, it's the only way. And then the next week a guy comes, follow the breath at the belly, it's the only way. And, you know, this kind of stuff. And so these villagers said to the Buddha, look, you know, these people are contradicting each other, and I don't know who to believe. And guess what the Buddha said? He said, don't believe any of them. He said, when you would know for yourselves that these things are true, then believe it. So he's saying, somebody comes along with a teaching, test it out and really give it a shot. And see for yourself, okay, when I start to, you know, when I'm practicing meditation, and each time, you know, these sorts of practices of, you know, I start to see the way suffering recreates itself in my mind over and over. And so I start, like, noting this, awakening to it and saying, oh, there's fear. Oh, here's hatred, here's ill will, here are all these things. And then you start to notice that these states are apprehended by you more quickly, even off the cushion in your daily life, things that would have sent you into a frenzy, suddenly you're meeting them with this balm of mindfulness. And you say, wow, you know, this is really working. I can really see how this quality of wakefulness is coming into my life. That's called verified faith, verified experience, because you're seeing for yourself. You know, because I don't know if you read this, but not too long ago, it was a year ago, maybe a little longer, a spiritual teacher with what I call unfortunate charisma. Yeah. And you know, we're innocent. If we have a charismatic presence, sometimes people can get lost in their own charismatic presence. and they have to learn that humility. But he put 60 people into a sweat lodge, and two or three people, maybe more, died, and many, many people became ill, because when their sense of discernment said, this is too hot and I'm not getting enough oxygen, came up for them, he would look at them and exhort them. He'd say, push past your limits. Push past your limits. And so people would meekly go back and sit down, and they died. So this is, you know, this ability to use like inquiry, to inquire. The Buddha went on with this group of people. He said, you know, if a thought of, I can't remember, well, here I have a similar inquiry that I'll read you. This is the Buddha talking to his own son, and he's teaching him an inquiry. He said, what do you think, Rahula? What is a mirror for? For reflection, sir. In the same way, Rahula, bodily acts, verbal acts, and mental acts are to be done with repeated reflection. So he's just teaching him how to check out, if I do this unskillful bodily act, you know, will it create pain and suffering? You know, this act, if I act upon it, this teaching, let's say a teacher's come and said, do this, and you just sit down and say, this teaching, when acted upon, is it for my good or for my harm? You know, and really sit with that and open to that. You can tell that the intention is for your good, then okay, fine, you try it. If you think it's for your harm, go back and sit down, push through the pain, you're out of there. And you really start to inquire into these experiences for yourself. And to me, that's the greatest way to dispel doubt, to really take a look at, question, you know. Don't be nice to teachers. Push them. Make them answer the questions. That's the antidote to doubt for the teachings. The antidote to doubt for one's own ability. That's one of the gifts that we work with practice, when we start to awaken. Each time those thoughts, self sort of judging thoughts come up, and we start to see this practice of judgment, see through it, and no longer identify with it and fall into it. You know, we start to see, well, wait a minute. What's helpful for a lot of people is it's a habit of mind for all of us to decide that everybody else knows more than we do. And so what's helpful is when we listen to other people and we think, wait a minute, the mind is the mind. Each of us has one. And each mind has this same problem, and we're more likely to forgive ourselves for it and just see it as a normal thing that can be worked with, that can be seen through. So that's it. I'm tired. We're going to have a walking period now, and then we'll come back and have a short sitting and dedicate this day of practice on 1-1-1-1. So we'll have 20-minute walking period, and then we'll come back. So the bell ringer, please ring the bell.